have lost one of our best leaders in the 20th century, El Comandante Fidel Castro. May his soul rest in peace. It was supposed to be a close meeting. Unfortunately, the application was turned down by the powers that be to say let it be an open meeting. I'll start by introducing myself. I'm Emmanuel Musawe Nkosi Mlambo. Can the honorable members introduce themselves? Thank you very much.
Good morning, all members. My name is Kate Lamin.
Good morning, my name is Kubes Marie, member of the committee.
Morning, Tumsan Kamede, member of the committee.
Shai Iso, member of the committee.
Good morning, Tumisan Kumbi, member of the committee.
Thank you very much, honorable members. General Masondo, over to you to introduce yourself and members of your delegation.
Thank you very much, honorable chair. I'm Lieutenant General Vusumuzi Masondo, the Chief of Staff of the USAIDF. And I'm accompanied by General Michael Ramatswana, Major General, who's in our planning environment, and Brigadier General Chris Gardner, who's also in our planning environment. Of course, honorable members, you know that currently the austerity measures in the department, and for that reason, we try our best to adhere to those and bring smaller delegations to Parliament. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, General Ken. Then everyone who is in this room be known. Can we all introduce ourselves? Honorable Bongo, you're the only one. Did you introduce yourself, honorable member?
I'm Bongo Thomas Bongo, a member of the committee.
Thank you. General?
Honorable Chair, there is an oversight on my part. We have on the back bench the head of the communication in the department, Mr. Lamini, and the two gentlemen behind me are my personal staff, my PA, Captain Kharisipe, and my driver, and VIP protector, CO Ramtele.
Thank you very much, General. Yes, over to you, sir.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Peter Nkavinde, Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Ministry. Good morning. My name is Reggie Marie, Parliamentary Officer, Department of Defense.
The Parliamentary Staff.
Good morning, Chair. I'm
Vlalem
van Rensburg. I'm the researcher for the Joint Standing Committee on Defense.
Thank you, the gentleman with the T-shirt.
I'm Kavuro Karisnyama from PMD.
Okay. Thank you very much. Hello, Joe. thank you very much. Yes, Comrade Tutu.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Bulola Matitani, Committee Secretary.
Thank you very much, Honorable Whip. You know, when you are used to a person, you don't forget that all protocols should be observed. Thank you very much. Oh, you know why I'm doing this, Honorable Members, is because this was supposed to be a closed meeting. And the gentleman that is coming in should introduce himself quickly, Chief. We haven't yet started. We're still on our introductory stage. Introduce yourself on the mic.
I am Malatso Mulepo. I assist the Committee with Communications.
So we know each other. Without any waste of time, let me explain the purpose of the presentation. We're dealing with a sensitive matter here. The combat readiness of our armed forces. So because it was supposed to be a closed meeting, and it's no longer closed, so I will request the presenters not to disclose what they think and what they believe will compromise the security of the country, especially operational matters. But they can give us what they believe. It can be known by the members of the public about the state of readiness of our armed forces. You are welcome, Honorable J.J. Skosana. I've already introduced you, sir. General, over to you and your delegation to present.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members of the Joint Standing Committee. Let me commence by tendering an apology for the Chief of the National Defense Force, General Shoke, who would have liked to be here to lead the delegation of the SANDF, particularly on the topic that we are discussing today. He had a minor surgery on his foot and has been put off for the past 2 weeks. Honorable Chair, members of the committee, I also want to say we consider this presentation as a continuation of the discussions that we have had over the past 2 years on the very same topic. Because at least on those occasions, somehow those closed sessions were able to fully account to the committee in terms of the state of readiness of the SANDF and the kind of challenges that we are faced with as the SANDF, particularly in terms of fulfilling our constitutional mandate. I also want to report to the committee that the status, as was discussed and reported to the committee, has actually not changed for the better. In fact, as we go into the future, we're experiencing even more difficulties. I think particularly of because of the situation that our country is facing economically, where there is an overall strain on the fiscals and therefore on the budgets of the department. We've been interacting with Treasury to try and come to an understanding that even though we understand the particular situation that the country is facing, but we wanted to make a request that there must not be a prescription in terms of where we should be cutting our budgets, so that we can be able to optimize the budget and make sure that we try and attend to those issues that are critical, particularly to our ability to carry out the current ordered commitments. Those discussions with the Treasury are still continuing. There's a meeting that is scheduled for the 6th of this month, where the Chief of the Defense Force and the Secretary for Defense will be meeting DG Treasury so that we can continue discussing this. So the focus of this presentation will be on the further challenges that we are faced with around the issue of particularly our HR budget and this prescription from Treasury that there must be a ceiling to this budget, and we don't have also space of maneuver in terms of then maybe increasing the budget to allow us, for instance, to be able to call up reserves to patch up where we're not able to make the numbers for operations. So with those few remarks, Chair, I want to then request General Ramatswana to continue with the presentation, and then after that presentation, we'll be able then and ready to respond to the questions that will be posed by members of the committee. But I want to just reiterate the point that has been made by the chairperson to say if there are questions that are of a nature that will maybe force us to disclose certain operational matters, we'll beg the indulgence of the committee not to respond to those. We can know those questions at an appropriate time, and when we have a closed session, maybe then be able to respond to those. Thank you very much.
Thank you, General. Over to you, General. I can say that you have won the battle of technology.
Chief of Staff, thank you very much. Chairperson, honorable members, as I've already introduced myself, Major General Ramatswana, introduced by the Chief of Staff, I will then move straight to the scope of the presentation. And the scope is as follows. We're going to be looking, starting firstly with the defense mandate. And the reason thereof is simply to unpack the constitutional mandate to say that how does this, as this mandate translate or manifest itself into practice. And we will then move on to the joint force employment missions and then conclude with the constraints that are brought in by the budgetary allocations as we have it for 2017 and the outer year. Chairperson, we thought that we need to start off the presentation by taking stock of the defense policies as they unfolded, because defense policy is key to national security in a number of ways. It is key, firstly, in terms of the development of defense capabilities. It is key in the sense of the utilization of defense resources through the military strategy. So we start off from 1994. Where we had the Joint Military Coordinating Council policy debate around defense. Now, this was meant to integrate the defense force as at the time. And also, this debate was therefore meant to establish the defense force as we have it today, a new defense force called the South African National Defense Force. We then move on. In 1996, there was then a white paper on defense that was put in place. Now, the purpose of this white paper on defense was to position the newly established defense force into a democratic South Africa. The theme that cut across there was defense in a democracy. And as well, it was also to position the defense force under civil control. And there were also a number of things that in there that were described, such as your civil-military relations, etc., etc. So that was the purpose of the White Paper on Defense of 1996. We then move over, Chairperson, in the Department of Defense with policy development, and that was the 1998 Defense Review. Now, as honorable members would know, that even today, the 1998 Defense Review, with all the challenges that it had, is still the policy document which is being implemented. Well, firstly, it established a peacetime force. It established a peacetime force wherein it did not envisage the defense force participation in peace missions, the defense force going back for border safeguarding. But more importantly is that it had a force design which was called a co-growth force. Now, the assumption around that force design was that this is the force design which, when it is required, we can then develop from that into a war force. Now, honorable members will agree that the situation has thus changed, because developing from a core force to a war force would require a time period, no less than 5 years, and in some capabilities that you would want to develop. So the situation has changed dramatically. But then from 1996 to 1998, the focus was also on transformation of the Department of Defense, wherein we have integrated restructuring of the Defense Force, closing down of some of the units coming from the 1998 Defense Review, etc., etc. We then, in 1999, came up with two policy documents as well. The first one was the White Paper on Peace Mission. Now, the White Paper on Peace Mission, the purpose was to position, or rather to provide, it was to provide the interdepartmental policy guideline on how we cooperate in terms of South Africa's involvement into peace missions. And beyond that, it was also to provide a picture in terms of contemporary peace missions as they are being conducted around the world. So that was the purpose of the White Paper on Peace Missions. But then we then have the White Paper on Defense-Related Industry. Now, this document was essential and very relevant at the time, because it had to, the purpose was to provide the government's vision in terms of the future of defense-related industries. And more so, it was also to provide policy options with regard to the governance and the continued viability of the defense-related industry. Chairperson, in the meantime, a number of resolutions, since we have just integrated, a number of resolutions were being made that led to the defense update. And thereafter, we then had an ministerial initiative in 2011, which was to come up with a new defense review. And the reason was because of a changing environment, i.e., increased defense commitments on the part of the Department of Defense. And therefore, the 2015 Defense Review came in, which honorable members are aware, it was approved by both houses of parliament, that is in 2015 in June, the 4th of June and the 24th of June 2015. Now, this, in short, has been policy development for the Department of Defense. But as we had this policy development, honorable members, none of them came up with a proposal to change the defense mandate. The defense mandate has been well articulated in the constitution, and covers to the satisfaction the defense's position in terms of the reasons for its establishment. We've got two major documents, one being the Constitution of the Republic 1996, as well as the Defense Act. One of the most important matters that has been raised, in particular in the Defense Act, is the one that says that the Chief of the South African National Defense Force shall manage and structure the Defense Force as a disciplined military force. But the primary object of the Defense Force being to defend and protect the Republic, its territorial integrity, and its people in accordance with international law regulating the use of force. Honorable members, a member of cabinet must be responsible for defense, in this case, the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, and that all operations that are conducted by the Department of Defense shall be so authorized by the Commander-in-Chief, the President of the Republic, in his capacity as the head of the National Executive. We had, as members will recall, an interim constitution, which was the 1993 constitution. It has stated certain fundamental issues in relation to the Department of Defense. The first and the second one is what I've already explained in as I discussed the mandate itself deriving from the 1996 constitution. But it goes on to speak about the preservation of life, health, or property, the provision of maintenance of essential services, upholding of law and order in support and in cooperation with the South African police services and for service in support of any department of state for the purposes of socio-economic upliftment. Now, this mandate, which we have just explained, how does it then manifest in practice? How do we unpack it so that it is practically visible? Honorable members, it relates to the protection and the defense of South Africa's sovereignty, territorial integrity, which would include our land borders, it include our airspace, our islands, our territorial waters, our exclusive economic zone, and extended continental shelf plains, and the fourth domain of warfare, which is the cyberspace. That is the mandate. In practice, that is how it must manifest itself, in terms of the territorial integrity and the sovereignty of the Republic of South Africa. Further unpacking the mandate, South Africa has got very long borderlines, very, very long borderlines, and a very long coastline. If we just look firstly into our borderline, just the land border, we're talking about more than 4,000 kilometers of our land border. And if one takes them and look at the rest, what it says, therefore, is that you need a military force that is self-supported, that is self-sustainable, and that has got good command and control in order for it to achieve this clearly defined constitutional mandate of the Department of Defense. And when we speak about the vastness of these borders, if we just take one border, for instance, I am still on the land border, honorable members, and if we take just Namibia and South Africa, just to look at how long this border is, it is 1,516 kilometers long. That is just the border South Africa and Namibia. Now, Botswana. Now, if you take that and you have to deploy, it's more like a distance from Cape Town to most probably south of Johannesburg or Johannesburg. Now, if you take that distance and you have to deploy a force, what is undoubtedly required is that the force needs to be highly mobile. It has got to have those mobile assets. And the that's the type of the force that you deploy. They've got to be very agile. Now, we are deploying at this point in time, we speak about the subunit. And you know, we already have 15 of those deployed in our borders. Now, as and when we added the two subunits, it was very important that we had to add one of those in our border between South Africa and Botswana. But the dispersion of this deployment, therefore, is also intelligence-driven. How you position your forces, it's also intelligence-driven. But we are not only focused in the border area as the Department of Defense. It is important that in the interior, in there, that we call that in military terms our rear area. Because it is important during military to deploy as far forward as possible, not to damage your infrastructure, etc. But in the interior as well, the defense force is mindful of our interior. Hence the strategic positioning in terms of the locations of our military capabilities. Now, the threat in our land borders, as it stands, and we are seeing these things happening all over around the world, the threat you would want, which you would think of immediately, would be normally what cross-border illegal activities. In the main, as a defense force, we would be concerned about the weapons, we would be concerned about the smuggling in of explosives, etc., etc. That being the land border, if I can just move on and just talk the airspace, still on the same slide. Now, the airspace has been indicated in there, and that's about more than 7,000 kilometers of South Africa's airspace, and that translates to the land as well as our maritime zones as we have them. Honorable members will also know that we also have Prince Edward and Marion Island as South Africa's responsibility. Now, that is the airspace that we have. Now, what is happening today is that there are a lot of dynamics in the aviation industry. And one of those is an increase in air transportation. Now, that increase in air transportation do not just come alone. It comes with all other challenges that it has. What we are mindful of is intrusion of those aircraft as we see around the world carrying weapons, carrying explosives. And another dynamic that is happening in the airspace as well would be a human trafficking in the airspace. And all of these elements happening in the airspace. So therefore, the increase in air transportation is beneficial commercially, but it comes with its own challenges. And you therefore need a very viable air force, an air force that is agile to be able to deal with situations. In defense, in ensuring the territorial integrity of South Africa's airspace. Honorable members, moving over to our maritime border. Now, we've got a coastline that is 3,800 kilometers long. That's the length of our coastline. Now, what we are showing you here, all of these are the maritime zones, from our territorial zones, right inside there, to our contiguous zones, to our EEZ and our extended continental shelf. I did speak earlier on to indicate to honorable members that we do have a responsibility, that is Prince Edward and Marion Island. But let me move over to the next slide to speak more about the Navy and about our maritime environment, which is also the responsibility of the South African National Defense Force deriving from our constitutional mandate. Honorable members, South Africa is positioned geographically at the southern tip of the continent, which is a major international sea route. Whether you're going to the east or to the west, it is a major international air route. And again, South Africa then becomes the gateway into the continent. into the SADC region and elsewhere in the continent. Now, what is also key to note is that even those countries that are landlocked do have interest at sea, even if they are landlocked. But the reason for that is mainly because their trade comes from the sea. Now, one of the other issues with the geographic location of South Africa, honorable members, is the fact that the trade which South Africa has with our partners is miles, is kilometers away from South Africa. Hence, one of the very key issues is the Navy's responsibility, the South African National Defense Force's responsibility in terms of protecting our sea lines of communication. It doesn't matter how long, how far they stretch, but that becomes, therefore, the Defense Force's responsibility. Now, one other thing, we also have international obligations on South Africa that are expected from South Africa. It's safe passage in our waters, safe passage of ships, the freedom of the seas, and as well as the safety of navigation. That is imposed on the South African National Defense Force. Important also to note is the fact that South Africa as a country, the only capability which South Africa has for navigational charting and mapping resides in the South African National Defense Force. And that being one of the international obligations which South Africa has, the navigational mapping and charting ensures safety at sea in terms of passage, etc., etc. Now, that's the capability that's imposed on us. If one begins to look at and interpret what are the threats in the Navy as it stands today. In the military, we've got a terminology, obviously the biggest threat that we have at sea, hence we find ourselves in the Mozambique Channel, is that of piracy. Now, we've got a term to describe piracy in the SANDF, and we call it what is called a balloon effect. Now, a balloon effect is if you squeeze the air here, it runs to the other side where you have not squeezed. You squeeze it there, the air still runs. That is piracy. That's how it operates. You put forces in the Gulf of Aden, it then goes to another area. You put South Africa's vessels in the Mozambique Channel, it moves up into Tanzania and all other places. That is the biggest threat. But one thing which we need to be mindful of is South Africa's maritime economy. The growing fishing sector in South Africa, the growing hydrocarbon sector offshore in South Africa. All of these things play a key and a fundamental role when it comes to developing South Africa's economy. Now, honorable members will recall that there was I can't remember if it was last year or so, where we had trouble with the fishing trawlers not responding to anyone up until the Navy has to be activated. Now, that tells you that what you need a very strong Navy to be able to secure our maritime environment at sea. This is what I've just spoken about, which is the hydrography, the capability which South Africa has and lies with the South African National Defense Force. I just want to show this to honorable members, the responsibility of the South African National Defense Force. As it stands there in the map, we start from, that is Namibia, with that, all that in blue, right around, that is the South African National Defense Force responsibility. And that is fast, because it also includes it includes our own coastline, and besides, it also includes the coastline in the west. Now, what you are seeing, honorable members, there, with this color, on the west and on the east, that is Angola, and that is Mozambique, and that responsibility is with Portugal. Now, what you see over there, that is Madagascar. But for hydrography, this responsibility over there, it's with France. And the reasons are very clear, as I explained. Now, when you look over there, this is the United Kingdom. with that responsibility. So that capability here lies with South Africa. And I have mentioned, honorable members, that where we are lying is a major international sea route, west and east. It doesn't matter where you are going. So the emphasis on this particular slide is that of a very strong Navy. Honorable members, this is also an obligation of South Africa at sea. This is the whole area in terms of our search and rescue. General, can you remind me, what are the square kilometers over here?
31 million
square kilometers, which is the responsibility of South Africa, an international obligation of South Africa. And this, honorable members, calls for a very strong Navy. The good thing, what has been happening with our search and rescue mission, South Africa has been good as always in terms of maximizing the resources that are available to the nation to be able to conduct this kind of operation. Now, I just want to conclude what we have tried to unpack, what defending South Africa's territorial integrity implies. And all, just to show this, what we have in the air border, as far as the airspace is concerned, we've got the registered airports, 730 of them in South Africa. I must just indicate something, if there is a change on this, because as we were coming, we didn't check with the Air Force and Joint Operations to see if there has been an adjustment. If there's a change, it would be minor. But an indication is that all of those need to be controlled with 10 international airports. You come to the land borders where we've got 53, and you come to the seaports, we've got 111. And all of that needs a very good and viable defense force. Although, in peacetime, you would expect that the responsible authorities are in control. But as a defense force, there are a number of things in this environment which may find their way through the cracks, and hence the importance again of defense intelligence. Now, the other part, this one is more in line with South Africa's foreign policy. That is our involvement in peace missions. And we know what our foreign policy says, peace and stability in the continent, in the region, which is SADC, and in the continent, which lies at the heart of South Africa's national interest. When you've got peace in the SADC, and outside of SADC in the continent, there will also be peace that translates into our own country. This lies at the heart of South Africa's foreign policy, and in fact also to advance the African agenda. Honorable members, I'll then be moving over to show you then, once we have this constitutional mandate, once we have the mandate on how it manifests itself in practice, how do we then manage it? We have put down a document in the military called the Joint Force Employment Strategy. Now that we have, the importance of it are the various missions which we have put in. These are 16 missions. But as we are writing currently, the military strategy has reduced this to 10, to about 10 missions, although not yet approved by the Military Command Council, that military strategy. So what you see in bold, honorable members, is what the SNDF is currently doing. Border safeguarding, peace missions, general military assistances, support the development of the SADC standby force, as well as presidential support. But as I've mentioned, the other things that the South African National Defense Force continue to do, as and when it is necessary, is your disaster relief and humanitarian assistance, your search and rescue operations, and the provision of essential services. I will therefore then honorable members move over to, I will not waste time on this. We have said these ones a number of times, honorable members. This is what we are busy with of Corona. Internally, it is 15 subunits. You, honorable members are aware. We have got, we are bordering six countries with South Africa, and all that which is being showed in the map there is the dispersion currently on how the SNDF has deployed its forces. Now, you've got 15 subunits in the border. What it therefore means is that you need a total of 45 subunits, because it is one in, if you have got the concept of one in three rotations, where you've got 15 deployed, one in reserve and one in training, you've got another 15 that's deployed, another 15 in reserve, and another 15 in training. So you in total need 45 subunits, and that translates to a number of infantry battalions. Again, the others, disaster relief, OP Prosper in cooperation with the SAS, as and when it is required, and OP Arabella, your search and rescue operation. Our external deployment, we are out of Sudan. What we are left with is the Democratic Republic of Congo, and we are also in the Mozambique Channel as it stands. Now coming on, I'm now on slide 24, honorable members. Moving over to slide 25, just to remind the honorable members, in terms of the minister's budget vote speech of 2016, the minister indicated that we have consistently indicated to this house that the defense allocation should be incrementally increasing towards at least 2% of the GDP, yet defense is consistently 50% underfunded, with compounding effects on our ability to conduct operations. Now, the reason why I've unpacked the mandate is just to show the honorable members the amount of responsibility which the defense force has. And this was in the minister's budget vote speech, as per slide 25. Now, the other thing which is important currently, we're calling this one a defense dilemma. If honorable members look at the defense budget allocation, which I will talk to in the next few slides, we are going to be there in 2019. That would be less than 1% of the allocation of the GDP going to defense. That is where we are going with the current provisional letter of allocation. But we have been on times when we've got sessions with the Joint Standing Committee on Defense and the PCB indicated how the other African countries are being funded. Now, this is all what is happening. Now, if we look at that, there's Angola there at 3.5. They've got 3.5% of their GDP. Whilst we are looking at South Africa, the South African National Defense Force, in 2019, that would be at less than 1% of the defense budget, of the GDP. Honorable members, we received the letter of allocation dated the 28th of October. But that letter of allocation says, in 2017, this is what we have, 48.6 billion. And by the way, this was for 2016, which we got 47 billion. Now, with that letter of allocation, that letter of allocation came with a lot of challenges, so to put it, especially as it relates to the HR budget. What is happening is, that is the HR budget for 17-18, 28 billion, but it came with a cut of to the nearest 100 I would call that 1.9 billion. That is what came with. So 1.9 billion has been cut. But if you take the 2017 outer year, the MTEF period, you then see that that cut would translate to more than 6 billion of the budget cut in the MTEF to the defense budget in the COE. In other words, it is the cut into the wage bill. Whereas the defense projection, well, that is what we needed, which was well within that which was initially envisaged as per the previous letters of allocation in the 2015 financial year. So that was the defense projection. And therefore, taking the budget cut itself and our projection, we therefore are saying, therefore, that that is the shortfall with the defense, what we'll be having come 2017. Now, that goes even into the 2017 outer year. That is where we are. Now, in the last financial year, the defense force, like any other department, had to follow the MTEC process of National Treasury. And in doing so, we had to go to a planning mode. The Defense Planning and Budgeting and Expenditure Committee went into that mode. And as we did that, we realized that that shortfall is correct with what we have. But then, additionally, if you would want to hear what the services and division says, we need to be capacitated as follows to be able to conduct our business effectively and to be able to get the defense force combat ready at all times. You then realize, coming from that exercise, that that would be your shortfall. But given what we have, that is actually the shortfall. The chief of staff has mentioned in his introduction the efforts which the department is currently having with National Treasury. Now, the implication of this, honorable members, the implication of this budget cut, which amounts to more than 5 billion in the MTEF period, I'll just start off with the year 2017. Now, what it means is that in 2016-17 already, the Defense Force needs to be looking at what can the Defense Force do with a staff complement of plus minus 3,500. Plus minus 3,500 because of the budget cut only in 2017. So we have to begin to be looking, what is it that we do? Are these people going to be exited? And if you are to exit these people, you don't have that fund. But here is one critical and important issue. The Defense Force is aware of government programs. And the Defense Force, as part of government, has a duty to support government programs. Now, that number, even if the Defense Force had the funds, it was not going to be possible to take that number of 3,500 and put them in the street at once. It is just not possible. These are trained people. The challenges that government has are well known by the Department of Defense. And therefore, now, that is what we need, we have. So what it means, in essence, because the budget cut of 1.9 billion came, and an estimate of 3,500 members, you still have them in the system. We are waiting, hopefully, and optimistically, to say that most probably something will come out from that. Because, honorable members, even if the department was to be given money, I don't think it will be that then we have to take 3,500 members out of the Department of Defense. What the Defense Force would rather want to have is a systematic program, systematic tools that would ensure that the things is done in a manner that supports government programs. In as much as our focus is on rejuvenating the Defense Force and do away with an aging military force. So if honorable members look into this, it means, therefore, that in the next 5 years, this is the figure that you need to think about. I'm talking about if we have to go back and look at this card that is translating to the 2017 MTEF. So then you would need to be thinking along these lines. And hence we are saying therefore that the engagement by the Secretary for Defense, National Treasury, we are waiting with optimism. Now, these challenges come from the fact that the wage bill has been reduced so much. And if you look at it, the Defense Force is busy now thinking as to whether we need to go ahead with the MSDS program or not. But, honorable members, it's a bit of a dilemma in the sense that you are not going to have a lot of savings because these are MSDS members. We're talking of an estimate of around 150 if we were to take 1,900, for instance. 150 million, of which in the last quarter of 2017, in the last quarter of 2016-17, which would be from next year, January to March, you're talking of spending around 35 million. And therefore then the rest in subsequent years, in month, etc. But what you will then be doing if you don't go ahead and have that intake of the MSDS, meanwhile you've got an attrition rate as well that which is not so much assisting, it may not be a plausible option to do. It might probably be a strategic error on the part of the Department of Defense. So these are the engagements which currently are going on in the Department of Defense to say, what should the final decision be on this? Honorable members, clearly, then with that cut on the wage bill, it impacts on a number of things. We already have challenges in that regard. But again, the outsourcing of services. We are always, in some cases, the reserve force comes in handy. When you've got skills available in the reserve force, you call them up and you simply pay them a salary other than getting consultants whom you are going to be paying millions and millions of rand. So there is quite a lot of implication. You then are going to find ways. In the Ministry Health Service, for example, it may not be unavoidable that you go this route. And obviously, honorable members, the last bullet, an aging force, which is something with an impact on rejuvenation, which is something which the Department of Defense has still to make a decision, out of which we probably think that the decision which the Chief of the Defense Force will come to is that we continue with MSDS in place. In other areas, honorable members are aware of this light. We have reached with the Military Discipline Bill. It is now currently at the final stage of approval. It received pre-certification from the Chief State Law Advisor and currently in its final stages of approval for its introduction to Parliament. In our concluding remarks, honorable Chair, We are indicating the issue with regard to the budget allocation, which currently, with the cut, which we have indicated to the honorable members, that would have an implication in the Defense Force and to satisfy our obligations. And the rest of the points, as indicated, are an emphasis, one of the examples being, once you have a budget cut, your easy place to go and cut is to stop the collapse of the reserve force. That's easy. You won't do that with the regular force. But with the reserve force, you simply stop the collapse of the reserve force. And the reserve force at this point has also been contributing with regards to the deployment of our forces. So that is where we are. And Chief of Staff, sir, I would hand back to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair Ramatswana, for the presentation. Chair, honorable members of the committee, we're now ready to actually respond to your questions in terms of the presentation that the Chair has made. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, General. Honorable members, here is the presentation from the DOD that may recognize the hand. Questions and clarities. I'll start from the Honorable Bongo. Honorable Skosana. In that order, because I can see that before we close the Honorable Bongo, maybe I might take a second bite. in that order, honorable members, exactly.
Yeah, thank you very much. And thank you very much, General, for the presentation. We really appreciate the presentation. I think I should say this, that and reiterate what I always say, that we as Parliament, we do not take very light the work that we are doing. And I think from the presentation, it arises very strongly that they are quite enormous challenges. But these challenges, I think, emanate in the main from the issues that I'm listening with great interest, the issues that relate to the cuts in the budget. But I should say that I'm just impressed that the military discipline bill is finally getting its way to Parliament. I think as Parliament, we've been waiting with great interest that we should deal with this bill, because at the center of it is about the discipline in the sector. Now, I just want to know the extent to which we have moved in terms of the defense review that we have recently passed, because you will know that before we have passed the defense review, there was a lot of calls from your side that please do the defense review. It's going to assist in some of the challenges. And we finally passed the defense review. So I want to just know how far are we in terms of the stage one of the defense review, and what are the main challenges the defense review. Now, you know, another issue which I want to know about is we have always said and advised that in terms of this border safeguarding, whether it's landward or maritime, so we needed to what we call a force multiplier, other than to look at the distances themselves. But we would advise that we need a force multiplier that will be able to include, among others, technology and so on and so forth. How far are we in terms of exploring force multipliers around this particular matter? And we had supported the view as Parliament that these budgets are issues of global, it's a global problem that faces the countries all over the globe, and South Africa is not immune. Now, we were also of the view that we need to make the defense force to be self-sustainable,
to be self-sustaining will mean that it does not necessarily depend on the fiscus for its implementation of some of these issues. I just want to know how far away, because what the sponsored SFU was, the deployment, the money that is received from the deployment should be directly channeled to back to the defense force, not necessarily to national treasury, as it is the case. How far are we in terms of ensuring that we get that interaction with national treasury? Because looking at the slides of other countries against the GDP and what we are presenting as a picture of 2019, I think it's going to be a very serious indictment for South Africa. And one other issue that we have raised sharply, Chair, was the issue of the endowment properties, having to look at how do we partly dispose of the endowment properties so that we can fund both the South African National Defence Force and the Defence Review, because when we adopted the Defence Review, at the centre of everything was that it is going to alleviate all the issues that we have raised as challenges in the sector. So I just want to know how far are we in terms of that, so that we can see the extent to which these interventions which we have sponsored as Parliament to you, they can assist in terms of taking these issues forward. But from where I'm sitting, I really sympathize with the budget cuts, so on and so forth. And one other issue is the issue of retention of the professional staff that I think I want us to also look at. But I think from where I'm sitting, at the center of the problems that we have and the state of readiness would be the issue around sitting down with National Treasury around two matters, one being the issue of endowment properties, two the issue of the money that we receive from the deployment. I think that will assist. And we have raised the issue of cyber, the cyberspace, because we need to be advised properly as Parliament in terms of the legislative framework that we may need to bring into place so that we are able to assist there. But there's one other matter that I think I would want you to share with us. You know, when you watch television day in and day out, we are being advised that there's what we call a regime change. So the extent also of our readiness in terms of being able to respond to some of those threats that we're not sure whether they are real or they are perceived. So I think those are my few issues, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also welcome the report from the defense. But Chair, as the report was presented before us, it don't show any hope in our operation. Instead, it shows a morale which is demoralized and is down because of unpalatable actions that are affected by our budgetary constraints. Chair, we talk about job creation for all departments, but in defense, it seems we're talking about job reduction instead of increasing job opportunities and so on because of the financial problem that they are having. There is a volume of work, and they are underspending. They are saying it's
almost 50%. I just want to know, Chair, of how do this department operate with this underspending of 50%? That's number one. And secondly, in terms of the shortage of the operational staff, hence this information is equal to the retrenchment of the staff. Then what are the measures do you take as a department to engage the treasurer, as my colleague was saying here? Or is there anything that you did? Because we can't just stop and say we've got a problem, but we must at least advance in doing something to say we want to prevent this. Can you just outline on that? And lastly, Chair, I should think we need to get a clear recommendation from the department. What needs to be done? And how do you want this committee to assist you with? It's very important. Because one, just to talk is not going to assist us. Instead, you must get a clear recommendation from yourself. Then we'll add our thinking on your recommendations and take the matter up. But your recommendations are fundamental in this call. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Over to you, Honorable Member.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I think the first observation that I want to make, and maybe a proposal and a request to you as Chairperson, is that we must invite National Treasury to come and brief us as well from their perspective, because I think it will be very important for us as a committee to interrogate them on the budgetary challenges from the Defence Force, because it becomes quite apparent now. The second one is that the presentation has given us the problem situation, but not the resolution. How do we resolve it? Because we can talk about the realities and how the budget is constrained, everything, but if we cannot get to a how to resolve this and a realistic and not an idealistic resolution. The one thing that we know, which is a reality, the economic climate of South Africa is projected to be going less than 0.5% of GDP. So we know there's going to be less money. We know about the national priorities. The fees must fall. The health insurance, education, and one can go on housing, etc., etc. That is national priorities, local government, etc. So those things are the realities that we must face and that we must deal with and that we cannot wish away. In the previous Joint Standing Committee meeting, we were briefed about two funding packages. Package one, package two. One, a reprioritization of expenditure to fit into the current budget. And then a second package. This presentation hasn't talked to that at all, hasn't even referred to that. It seems like, and maybe I'm wrong, but that hasn't been taken into account whatsoever. So we will have to know, in terms of that two packages, funding packages, what the department is, or what the Defence Force has done to look at how to package into the one the highest priorities that can fit into the current budget, and then obviously those that we need additional funding for. Chairperson, if my understanding is of a budget, you've got a revenue side and you've got an expense side. If your budget do not balance, you either have to get more revenue or you have to cut your cost. You cannot not have both of them and then think that you will survive. Now, on that one slide where it says the defense dilemma, the one is showing quite correctly you know, the decrease in funding. And on the other side, it says audit commitments. Now, obviously, as we know, that the funding will even go further down, because we remember we're not in NATO, in a conventional warfare situation, so that's obviously influencing National Treasury as well. But on that audit commitments, isn't that where one needs to analyze and unpack that? What are those audit commitments, and what does it cost? For instance, we must know how much is the peacekeeping missions and involvement there costing us, and how much is flowing back to National Treasury, to the National Revenue Fund. Because if that is if there's a huge gap, then National Treasury will be reluctant to even give us more money, because it means that gap effectively will grow even bigger. And if there's a problem on the revenue side, and we know that the revenue is dependable on the serviceability of your equipment, and we have had submissions in the past to say that our equipment is not really suitable for the conditions in Central Africa. So what needs to be done? And so in other words, we need to address that problem. And there must be a specific resolution in terms of, because sometimes you have to spend money to get money. But at this stage, we're not spending money, but we want more money. So it's a vicious circle. If we look at the obligations in terms of especially our land borders, but also our sea borders. First of all, on the land borders, even with that 15 units and the total in 45 terms of the 1-in-3 rotations, it just seemed, can you give us indication whether that 15 is enough? Because if you see how they are spread over this huge land border area, it seems like, I mean, it's like a buckshot in the air, and you hope that you know, they will drop it at a specific point. Is that really efficient? And if that 15 is not efficient, how many do we actually need to make sure that we protect our land borders effectively in terms of those cross-border doubts that you've got in terms of all those transportation? In terms of those sea lines, sea areas, sea borders, how do we normally patrol that? We were used to those Albatross aircraft to patrol the sea borders, and the old days, the Shackletons, and even I think it's supposed to be the Dakotas at 35 Squadron. Now, if I can remember correctly from one of our previous submissions, even when we were in Pretoria, it was said to us that there's even one Dakota operational in Cape Town. So where do we stand in terms of vulnerability in that regard? Also, because that's a huge borderline, what is the alternative? What is the alternative if we don't have currently aircraft to patrol and give feedback and do surveillance? What is our capacity in terms of rescue missions? If we suddenly been called out to a couple of instances, will we be able to do that effectively? We know that when we were last in Pretoria, it was also said to us that I think there was one C-130 operational, and they were waiting for another one to come back. How does that affect? Because it seems like we will have to identify and say, here's the biggest priorities for us to spend money and to make sure that it is focused at resolving specific problems. Because currently, it seems like everybody is complaining, but we don't have a resolution. And we will have to cut out those nice-to-be's and come back to those first-priority expenses. And one would need a bit more information on that. On the human resources, and I understand the problem, because currently it seems like we do not have an exit strategy and a plan. Because we know about many people who want to take exit packages and basically help her resolve that problem. But from the presentation, I get the impression there's no money to give exit packages. Is that correct? And I mean, surely if National Treasury wants you to reduce your human resource capacity, then somehow they must assist. Or what is your alternative way of funding those exit packages? Because somehow you will have to do that. Because we know about quite a number of people who went through various stages to get exit, and then basically towards the last they say, sorry, back to base. Is that how do we resolve that problem? Also, I would like to see a breakup, an analysis of our human resource situation in terms of age, in terms of even rank, in terms of demographics, so that we can see what do we work with. If this is an aging defense force, it means that we've got nobody, there's too many chiefs and not enough Indians. Is that the reality in terms of the proverbial, you know, by the proverbial saying, there's too many chiefs and not enough Indians. Is that the case? And how do we resolve that? And I haven't seen that analysis. And one would like to see the real problem that is really facing us. If I look at this search and rescue area in terms of our obligations, one would also like to see where are those obligations, or which are the obligations that we cannot get out of, if I can use that phrase, and which are the obligations that we can reconsider. Because it seems like we will have to start and reconsider, not necessarily that we don't want to do it, but what we can afford and not afford. Because we will have a situation that we will not be able to fulfill our constitutional mandate. Because you want to be too many things for too many people at once, and you just cannot do that. Chairperson, that's my first round. I'll probably second bite of the cherry again. Thank you.
It will depend on our time, Honorable Mare.
Thanks, Chair. Now that the Honorable Minister has gone out, I'll take the chance. And Chair, also say that I'm aware that this meeting is scheduled for 9 to 11. So if my push comes to a shovel, my question can be, the responses can be written if we fail to meet to be the time. On the issue of borders, General Masondo, do we have an idea how many unregistered, given the registered, the number of registered borders? Do we have, as a security threat, do you have the unregistered airports in the country? And if we have such, what are the sanctions for such? I'm sure that will include on the unregistered borders. I'm sure that there we can also include private airstrips, because the mere fact that any person can enter a country using a private airstrip, in brackets, it could be a border. Also on the issues of air, one hears that nowadays there are a lot of drones. Are your radars then able to pick up most of these drones for security reasons? And the questions you cannot answer, you just don't have to answer. On the question of outsourcing, which you might say might be the implication if the budget is not improved, do you think outsourcing will then reduce the cost. As we see today, outsourcing is more expensive than, you know, getting permanent employees. Lastly, as a way of going forward, the department is known to have a lot of endowment property. Is it possible that we could use this property to get funds to safeguard our borders? I didn't believe it one time when I heard this, that there is a property owned by the department just here in Cape Town, just at the beachfront almost, in a prime area. And even if the department has to put, to build a five-star hotel, it would get a lot of money, not even selling. Or if it is there to lease it. I know it was Natal, it's also at the beachfront. The department has got property. So all these properties, can we utilize these properties profitably just to get funds? Thank you, Chair.
Chair, thank you very much, Honorable Member. Honorable Sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I think the objective of this meeting is the combat readiness of the defense. Now, we've spoken at length about all other issues except the current situation of dealing with combat and what is the capacity and capability of the defense and all its arms. Now, I do understand this is an open meeting, and therefore, I would like us to immediately lodge an application with the Chair of Chairs and ask that we have a closed meeting so that we can interrogate every arm and know exactly all the equipment and all the armory that is in use. How effective is it? What are the issues and challenges? And that's dealing with the real issues of combat readiness and being deployed. So with that, that is the first issue which is a concern, because we're not going to get real answers here today except to speak about HR and budget, which we've gone through at length at other meetings. We really wanted to address combat readiness of every unit. The other one is we've raised the issue of the force multipliers, and the NAL is selling drones to the rest of the world, but the NAL is not supplying the very army that we have, and you see, except for Project Rhino, that they introduced the force multiplier because they couldn't cover the Kruger National Park. Why has this not been done? We have all the capabilities, we got all the research and things done, we've got even the drones in South Africa. Why is it not being used? Secondly, can we also use the satellites? We have a huge satellite that is serving the rest of the world. How do we effectively use satellite, particularly if you look at sea borders and 31 square kilometers? Are you going to cover that with a boat? I think we have to be real. The rest of the world is way ahead. They're using satellites to manage and even track and whatever situation there is. So we need to address those issues differently. It cannot be simply about manpower. It has to be more about technology. The other one is that the issue of the MEMS that we spoke about. Now, we've been speaking at length about it. Treasury has given a directive that 10,000 people need to be, of course, retrenched, and they must be dealt with, and that's also part of Milestone 1. The MSDF has also done a presentation. They said 20,000 needs to be retrenched so that we can introduce new blood into the system. Nothing is being done. Now, if we cut out 10 people in terms of Milestone 1, there's no salaries to be paid, except that there's a settlement that must be done. How long is Milestone 1? Every milestone is 5 years. Now, I don't see figures on the table. I don't see retrenchment. I don't see exit mechanisms. I don't see packages. So the point of discussion is pointless for me. We can complain and complain, but we don't work out the real issues and how to work the figures and how to budget it and engage Treasury on those basic matters, then we are simply just complaining. So I'd like to see more figures. The 40-30-30 principle that we speak about in the defense review, we're standing now at 57%. That's increased from 55%. This is totally unsustainable. So I think we have to be realistic how we run a defense force. It is not a job creation opportunity. It is not a place where you put just people to go work because it's a job. It has to be run as an effective unit, and it has to be managed with funds and money that can drive it, and resources and equipment that is suitable for all different terrains to ensure good combat and preparedness by the soldiers. It's not simply employing people. These are special forces, these are special people that are specially trained, money invested into their skills, and they offer up most of their life for South Africa. So I think the approach needs to be a different approach. Arms Corps needs to give us a report back because they've been basically commissioned to deal with the sweating of assets and endowment properties and developments and things. We have to wait for Arms Corps to give us a report back, and I'd like to see what plans, because that is in relation also to public works and the rest of government and properties, and will, of course, defense be considered an exceptional case to use assets for their own benefit and not for the treasury and the fiscal as a whole. The other one, the two packages, we know that the one is, the minister has spoken about package one, changes can be made at no cost within the budget that we have currently, and the package two would be the 1.8 billion, which nothing has been budgeted for. In fact, the defense had to reduce by 1 billion, and there's no money put aside for milestone one. So we have a real situation. Pointless complaining, the money is not there. What do we do in the current circumstances to make, as Major General mentioned, the presenter, that South Africa has always excelled with the limited resources in what they have and to achieve as well. Now let us see what we can achieve. This is the real situation. Let us get down to it. Let us resolve our issues. Let us get on, put our plans in place. And of course, we continue knocking on the door of Treasury and to increase the budget with the full support of our committee. The issue of piracy, I see there's all other international countries. South Africa is one, but we find the UK there, we find Portugal there and others. How is the arrangement done in terms of the funding of the operations? Then also Namibia is allocating 4.4% of its budget to its defense, but South Africa patrols its sea borders. Do they actually pay us? How much do they pay us for protecting their country? It's nice to have good neighbors, but it comes at a cost, and we're complaining about money. They're allocating much more than what we are allocating to our defense. So is there some remuneration or some compensation for the roles of Africa's playing to protect the borders of Namibia? I think the other issue that I'd like to raise is we understand that the situation is becoming more difficult. It is more challenging for defense. And we also know that there are simple things like the what we call national key points of South Africa. Now, this runs into hundreds of key points. We find it's protected by security companies, not the defense. National key points of this country protected by a security company that you pay and employ or hire to come protect us. We have spoken about this at length as a committee when we visited all the different sites. And we asked, this is the first and foremost responsibility of the defense. It's a national key point. Why aren't our soldiers also being used effectively? And where we have soldiers, like at Young's Field, and every week there's a break-in, and the soldiers standing there by the gate don't even have arm with them, any gun with them. So what are we doing to our own national key points? So there are serious considerations where we are wasting money with outsourcing it to defense, to security companies, and we're not employing our highly trained own soldiers to protect our own bases. So we're wasting our own money. So the outsourcing is not only to consultants, but it's only very basic services that can be done by soldiers. So I think those are issues that I'm concerned about that should be looked at urgently, where we can make savings and where we can up the performance and discipline of soldiers, and have also clean barracks and clean bases. We have visited these bases. We've seen that soldiers are just not concerned about maintenance. No, go get the plumber. No, go get this. No, go get this. No, go get the Cubans. And we hope the situation is changing. Project Tosano has seen the shift of transfer of skills, and South Africans are, but this should be the work ethic. This should be the attitude. And I think this disciplinary bill, the sooner we can implement it, the better. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. I think the Honorable is you have put it correctly. It is not the problem of the department that you get this kind of a presentation. It is the parliamentary problem. And I also want to agree with the Honorable Murray in terms of us as honorable members engaging, assisting the department in terms of engaging with treasure. We can see, honorable members, that our defense force is in trouble. Although we need to really get a proper presentation, maybe we need to get out of the parliamentary premises and visit or do an oversight with an aim of getting the real presentation like we did the last time. We go to the headquarters, you know, so that it is our duty really to know how ready or how combat ready is our force, you know. So we need to be seen assisting. With those few words, General, over to you in terms of responses. Although, really and truly, let us be honest, this is not what has been expected. You know, where we'll talk of HR, we'll talk of figures. How ready are we? Magutiwatswe, Tramuhi, over to you, General.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members of the Committee. Chair, I just want to remind you that in my opening remarks, I indicated that we regard this presentation as a continuation of the discussions that were had in terms of state of the readiness of the SA Indians. And I also want to assure this committee that as the SANDF, we respect your oversight role over the SANDF. And therefore, there's nothing for us to hide. But we also have a responsibility to ensure that we don't disclose information in types of fora where it can leak out and be used against our country. That's why I therefore welcome the proposal by the chair to say, if you go come to our headquarters as we did or our other elders, we will discuss with you openly and give you answers to what you want to know. It is our duty to do so.
Sorry, General, just a minute. I just want to request from honorable members, and taking from what you've just said, looking at the time, really I heard that the other members are pressed by time. But when it comes to the responses that you are going to give, I would suggest that guide me, honorable members. It to be done maybe in a written form. Because honestly, we still have to adopt the program for the first term and what also and the outstanding minutes. And we can't leave those two things for next week. We need to do them before the houses arise. So I'll request that, General, you give us the written replies. But as the committee, we will have, maybe after we have gone, we'll have to discuss as to how we approach the issue of a proper presentation. Honestly. Honorable Louis?
Chair, just with your respect, I think we should at least give the General just 5 minutes to respond on whatever, you know, we say, yeah. And then the rest can be, you know.
Okay, no, thank you very much. Honorable Murray?
Chairperson, I want to support that. I think if the, you know, the General, I mean, what we need to do is probably going to take us 5 minutes, or so, not more than that.
Okay.
So if the General can take, 10, 15 minutes.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Point taken. Over to you, General.
Yeah, thank you very much, honorable members of the committee. I will commence with the questions from Honorable Bongo. The first one being around the issue of how much we have moved in terms of implementation of the defense review. And I want to commence by saying the Defense Review 2015 was an initiative driven by our political principle to say it is necessary to have a policy that takes into account that we have now more responsibilities as the SANDF, inclusive of peace support operations, which were not envisaged by the 1998 Defense Review. And that given that situation, therefore, we need better funding to be able to take on these responsibilities. That was the essence of the Defense Review. And of course, it's divided into milestones which ideally should be implemented within periods of 5 years to coincide with the administration that is there, so that it is a program of that administration and it can be implemented in that package. We have done some work in terms of determining what it would cost to actually implement milestone one of the defense review. And if I were to share with the community those figures would be shocking because the business of defense is very expensive. And we have also said, what we have done in terms of that work, we said, okay, there are issues in terms of the milestone one that do not require funds, issues of policies and what. And we have started implementing those, you know. But there are areas in terms of trying to arrest the deterioration of our capabilities which require money. But that work we're finalizing, we're going to be presenting to our minister so that she's also aware of what the cost would be. And then perhaps we can then come and share with the committee the costs around that and how the plan we intend to actually implement it, given the necessary funding. However, out of the realization that this money may not actually come out of the fiscals, we ourselves, gave consideration to the fact that we must look at the funding model outside funding from the Treasury. And that work includes the work that is being delegated to AMSCO to determine which of our assets can actually be sweated or sold to raise part of this money. But we're also looking at issues like the money that we get as part of reimbursements in terms of our operations, UN operations, that money also must be channeled back to the Defense Force. We've made some progress in that regard. Treasury has indeed channeled part of that money, not the whole money, back to the Defense Force. But through our day-to-day activities as the SANDF, we also raise a lot of revenue, which revenue goes to Treasury. And we see that as what could be one of the sources that can be utilized to actually channel towards the implementation of the Defense Review. Then there's a question on border safeguarding and using technology as a force multiplier. There's work we are doing in this regard, but I can't give details now in this kind of an open forum. Together with the question on the on our cyber strategy and what is being done. Safe to say that the strategy has been developed, and now we are trying to raise money for that, but we are doing that through the JCPS cluster. So our support, because it was government decided that it is important that as government something must be done around this, and that therefore funding cannot be just looked at in terms of coming from one department. So I want to assure you, Honorable, something is being done in that respect. Now the issue of our extent, the extent of our readiness to respond to a regime change. Well, if it's an issue that has a military element to it, you know, then we can determine our response to it. But if it has other elements, maybe connotations is something that maybe we cannot be actually involved in. Sir, I forget your name, Honorable. Thank you very much. Honorable Skosana made a remark about the fact that our presentation and report does not touch on our operations, and of course, as I indicated in my initial remark, that we consider this presentation as a continuation of our discussion in terms of the other issues. But on the issue of other departments looking at job creation, and ourselves looking at retrenchments and I want to emphasize the fact that the Department of Defense if it is to be involved in job creation or alleviation of high levels of unemployment, it will be a byproduct of our recruitment, I mean of our efforts to rejuvenate the SAM youth. You know? And at one time, there was pressure on us to actually increase the number of youth that we recruit as part of the military development system, just to try and alleviate the pressure, particularly on youth unemployment. And we try to indicate that in the line of work that we do, we need people who essentially want to serve as soldiers, not who are looking for jobs. Because part of the problems we've had and experienced is that in our recruitment system, there were elements of corruption where we brought in people who essentially were looking for jobs and are today are giving us problems in terms of discipline and all those areas. So we've done some work around defining the profile of the soldier that we require so that that informs the recruitment processes of the SAND. Then the question on our on 50% underspending, I'm not sure whether that it derives from the presentation, because from the presentation, the message we're conveying was that we are 50% underfunded, not 50%. Of course, we've got challenges in terms of spending the budget that we have. And of course, at times, the question is that how can you want more money when you actually cannot be able to spend even what we have? And those challenges arise from the fact that, for instance, for the maintenance of our facilities and the budget for that comes from the SANDF, but it's channeled to the Department of Public Works, you then have to then maintain our facilities. You know? Sometimes it doesn't get spent and all that, but it's shown as under expenditure of the different sources. And there are also issues of capacity of defense industries sometimes to provide for our requirements.
Honorable Skosa?
Yes.
Thanks, Chair. Sorry for interjecting, yes. General. No, General, my question was related to underfunded and how do you operate, because you have got the 50% underfunded, not underspent.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Sir. You know, the Defense Force is made up of personnel and soldiers who have an attitude of we can do. So when we are given an instruction to do something, we try to make it work. But when that thing happens, it happens at the expense of something else. And with time, those things will show, and we'll get to a point where even what we are instructed to do will not be able to. But we're trying our best with the limited resources that we have to make sure that what we are instructed by government to do, we do. And we continuously communicate the challenges of trying to do this with inadequate funding. Because sometimes, because if you do this, you compromise on the level of training and all that. And of course, if you send your trained, not adequately trained military personnel to operations, and we suffer losses, you may have to account even for that. So those are the type of difficult decisions that sometimes we have to take to try and make things work. I like the issue of coming up with a very clear recommendation in terms of how we can be assisted by this August body. And of course, first and foremost, we appreciate the assistance that we had in terms of pushing forward the Defense Review 2015, because these committees have had a big role in them. But unfortunately, it was approved, and approved at the time when our economy is not doing well, and therefore the funding that is envisaged as part of the Defense Review is not flowing. But even with that, in that case, we are still trying our best to see how we can, with the limited resources, implement certain aspects of the defense program. The area also where we would require assistance, and actually it has been touched upon, some interaction with Treasury. First and foremost, to say, yes, we understand the difficulties that are facing the country, but at least we request the Treasury not to be prescriptive in terms of where we should reduce spending and all. So that's one other area which requests assistance. We're working on the military disciplinary bill. It is true the clusters will also require assistance once it comes here, so that that can be passed as an act that would then assist us to run the defense force as required by the Constitution, run it as a disciplined force. And I would want to proceed to the questions that were asked by Honorable Maria. That the presentation is just a focus on giving problems without proposing solutions to the problems. And that we should be conscious of the demands of on the fiscals in terms of fees must fall from the education sector and other demands. I want to assure the Honorable Member that as the military leadership were responsible enough, and we have taken certain initiatives to ensure that we ourselves can contribute towards cost saving. And one of the areas that we can cite as an example is an area where we brought the children to assist us in the maintenance and repair of our vehicles and in the training of our artisans. Because this is one area where industry was actually taking advantage of us and were paying huge amounts of money and not deriving value from the kind of money we're paying. We're constantly discussing issues of introducing efficiencies in the manner in which we do our work. Because we are conscious that a department like ours is mostly a resource consumer than, you know, contributing resources to the fiscus. So the issue of whether there are sufficient units to safeguard the border, I think is an issue that has been communicated, that at the least we need 22 subunits to actually protect our border. But not only that, combine this with technology, you know, sensors and all that, so that we can be effective in that area of our work. But we have not been able to increase the numbers precisely because of the budget constraints. Honorable Chair, I would not delve into the issue of capabilities that are actually operational and those that are not, and not, because I don't think it's an issue that we can now discuss in this open. But in a closed session, we can discuss that in depth. The issue of an exit strategy is an issue that we ourselves have started to discuss with the Treasurer. But faced with the numbers that we may have to reduce the result of the budget cuts, we are also, we want to revive the earlier initiatives that we had with the Correctional Department, Correctional Services Department, the SAPS, where we can actually direct some of our exit, some of our members to be taken on by those departments. The issue of men, we've had challenges around men because the men was supposed to assist us to exit those members who are not very effective, who are in the employ of the SANDF. However, we found a situation where most of the members who actually want to apply are actually members with the critical skills that we require. And therefore, it would not make sense to actually give them MEM and then lose those skills, you know. So the discussions we've been having with the Treasurer is around having an exit mechanism that will be attractive to those members that we actually want to exit, so that they can, we can actually exit them. In terms of the analysis of the HR profile that we have done, age, demographics, and all, that information we have, and we can share with you then if that is required to check. Well, the issue of, in terms of our search and rescue obligations, of us looking at what we cannot, what we can get out and what we cannot get out. I mean, this is a political question, it's not the issue of the SAEF. You know. We can advise, but we cannot take those kind of decisions. Honorable Kamed, you have raised issues about the registered airports and...
Chair, through you, I said mine, you can...
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay. Okay. And also, Honorable Isao, the issues that we are raising really are issues that we ourselves are clear that if you want answers to this, then you can. We've been talking for a long time, and it's an issue that is even included in the defense review, the issue of 40-30-30, and the fact that we are spending 57% on our HR budget is not, we understand, it's not a healthy thing, because it denies us the opportunity to channel resources towards the revival of our capabilities. So it's an issue that with proper funding where we can exit some of our members who are not effective, we can begin to address that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, General. Honorable Professor.
Maybe just a comment on the Namibian border, Honorable Chair.
Yeah. Well, I indicated even that it's not something of the SANDF. We cannot determine whether the SANDF want to. Those are political decisions which we implement.
No, the question was not the arrangement between the two countries politically. It was if the defense forces actually compensated for deploying our ships to patrol the Namibian border and protect it.
Can I help you?
Yeah, sure.
I think, Chairperson, thank you. That was on the slide that you showed was on hydrograph. That one where we also show Angola, we show Mozambique, we show that's hydrograph. Hydrographic responsibility. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Can I release you, General?
Sorry, Chair. Maybe let me just comment on the issue that honorable members may not understand why issues of having soldiers to clean our bases and all those are not happening. With the introduction of unions in the SANDF, you know, we've got challenges in terms of utilizing the soldiers in the manner we should be utilizing them. Because sometimes when we want them to clean the building, then we are told by the union's challenge to say no, but there must be civilians, there are civilian people who are employed doing cleaning and all that. And it's not a healthy situation. You know? The soldiers must be able to do this thing. Because when we are in deployment outside, there won't be civilians to be cleaning our bases and all that. You know? But some of the challenges that we have as a result of having unions in the department. Thank you very much.
Thank you, General. And thank you for the presentation. Honorable members, can I release the General and his entourage? And then we remain because we need to adopt the program and the minutes. Yeah. Welcome to live, General.
Yeah, thank you very much. Perhaps as a parting shot, we want to extend the invitation to the committee, maybe to come to our headquarters where we can discuss these things.
It's fine, General. We'll handle it. The issue of organizing a proper meeting. Sure. Thank you. You enjoy your weekend and travel safe. Honorable members, we have to continue. We need to adopt the program and adopt the minutes. We do form a quorum, I believe. We've got 3 sets of minutes.
Four.
No.
You see, I've raised this thing of time, honorable members, and I was very serious because we couldn't. We need to form a quorum to adopt minutes. Hence, I was trying to avoid the question of a lengthy kind of response because, honestly, Friday is very short. And we need to be realistic about the pressure that we put ourselves into. Unless we agree that next week we will squeeze an hour to adopt the minutes and the program. I'm saying unless we say next week we squeeze an hour to adopt the minutes and the program before we rise. The problem is high.
On Wednesday lunchtime.
Wednesday lunch.
No, I'm saying, honorable members, it's either we do that or we do it now. Because the set of four we need to go through, we haven't gone through this minute. You see? Other members have just received the minutes now. We need to do justice on this minute.
Wednesday? Wednesday, no problem.
Wednesday, lunchtime.
Yeah.
No, let's sit lunchtime Wednesday. We'll arrange lunch this week.
Okay.
For members.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The meeting is adjourned.